Welcome to the serial audiobook presentation of The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella. Written by Scott Sigler and Paul E. Cooley. Performed by Scott Sigler. This novel is available as an ebook for Kindle and other e-readers, or as a full-length, ad-free, unabridged audiobook from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. Find purchase links at scottsigler.com/The Rider.
Hello, junkies. Oh, do you notice a change in the voice? No, the FDO is not going soprano. It is me, A. Kovacs, the director of Doom. Yes, it's A. Real Girl herself. And I'm here to welcome you to the final episode of The Rider. The FDO is heads down working on Mount Fitzroy, so I'm taking the reins to get this episode out. And next week is Sigler Fest 2K17. If you're coming out, we can't wait to see you. Also next week, our Rider Q&A episode. Do you have a question? Maybe a comment? About the Rider? The GFL? The Siglerverse at large? Anything you want, send that question to info@emptyset.com. Because next week, we will be recording the Q&A live at Sigler Fest. Your fellow junkies will read your question out loud, and the FDO will answer live. That means next Sunday is episode 17 of The Rider, which is the Q&A. And then, in 2 weeks, on Sunday, October 15th, we launch our new podcast novel, Alone, book 3 of the Generations trilogy. Ooh, I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait! Oh, did you hear our story smack this week? We covered the new Netflix special, Jerry Before Seinfeld. And guys, I gotta tell you, it's awesome. To tune in, check your podcast feed or go to scottsigler.com and look for the Story Smack episode right below episode 16 of The Rider. Or you can go to scottsigler.com/podcast/Jerry-Before-Seinfeld. Join Scott and I for that episode as we blab all about the new special from one of pop culture's all-time influencers and one of the world's greatest creatives. Now, the story so far for this episode? Since this is the last episode of The Rider, if you don't know what's going on, go back now and listen to episode 15 so you hear the final match in all its blood-splattering, armor-crunching, dinosaur-smashing glory. And then come back and listen to this. And junkies, now it is time. Here we go with the final episode of The Rider.
Pete lay in the thick fluid of a rejuve tank. His right arm was locked down tight in a metal contraption a visiting Harad doctor had put on him. 2 days for the collarbone to heal, apparently. Not that it mattered. The season was over.
You sure that's what you want?
Pete looked at the man asking him that question. 2 meters tall, athletic, dressed in doctor's clothes. It was the same human he'd talked to a few days earlier. The same one, but he looked completely different.
It's what I want, Fred, Pete said. Can you make it happen?
Fred looked off. He took a big breath, let it out in a lip-flapping huff.
Yeah, I can make it happen, but I won't lie. It's going to cost you.
One arm locked up meant one arm free, and one arm free meant Pete could drink beer as he floated along. One full mag can and 2 empties floated close by. He took a sip. Might as well enjoy it. If this didn't work, he wouldn't even be able to afford beer.
I know, Pete said. Just do it.
Fred brushed blonde hair out of his eyes. Pete wondered if that was his real hair or was as fake as the red hair he'd had while impersonating a certain bartender back in Roughland.
I'll take care of it, Fred said. If it's any consolation, Pete, that first game was a thing of beauty, and I don't even like sports.
Fred turned and walked out of the rejuve room. No, that wasn't any consolation. Pete still couldn't believe it. They had lost. They'd lost the last 2 games.
The Ridgebacks finished the season at 7-5, one game behind the Stompers for the last slot in the championship tournament. He'd wanted the Dino-Lition title. The Ridgebacks hadn't even qualified for the postseason. Pinky, the pro actor, hadn't been able to continue for the second game. Hermano, Pinky's rider, had switched to Wee Bob to replace Bocephus, who was marinating in Bess's digestive system. Bocephus was the Ogre's team captain. Without him, Pete had thought the Ridgebacks could win one more game and take the match. Instead, what he'd seen, what the fans had seen, what most of the galaxy had seen by now, was the birth of a superstar. Much like Ian and Sydney clicked, Hermano and Wee Bob just worked. The final two games made it clear that Bocephus didn't know how to fully utilize Wee Bob's size and strength. With Hermano as Wee Bob's rider, the mammoth had dominated dismount, long trunk plucking Pete from his saddle and tossing him aside, then swatting Dar right off Jerry's back. Ian had faced 4-on-1 odds. He'd perform spectacularly, dismounting the riders of both Brain and Crazy Jake, then putting Andy out of the match for good with a spectacular Sydney leg kick that broke the Androsarcus's right knee. It was almost a legendary come-from-behind win, but when Ian and Sydney passed by Wee Bob, Hermano made every sports highlight reel there was by sliding down low on Bob's side, reaching out, and snatching Ian out of the saddle with one hand. The sports sites were already going crazy over the match. Much of the galaxy had tuned in to see the first appearance of a Triceratops. They got that, and they also witnessed the birth of a new rivalry, Ian Bajas versus Hermano. The two young stars put on a show for the ages. With Bocephus turtled up in Bess's belly and Pete barely able to move thanks to the cracked collarbone, the old men were sidelined while the future of the league battled it out on the pitch. The final match had been tug of war. Pete had thanked High One for that, because he wouldn't have been able to make it through a third full contact game. He'd hoped for a win, but Bess hadn't been quite right after that headshot from Wee Bob. Despite giving up over 1,000 kilos, it turned out that a mammoth, a proactor, and a glyptodon trumped a scrambled T-Rex, an exhausted Triceratops, and a wounded Austroraptor. Even though it was 3-on-3, the Ridgebacks couldn't counter the pulling power and leverage of Wee Bob, who didn't seem the least bit fatigued. Pete sipped his beer. Lopu Stadium not only had the best pitch and the best locker rooms, it also had the best medical facilities. Not just one, but 3 full-sized rejuve tanks for mounts of all sizes. Those were filled up. Andy and his broken leg, Pinky with a dislocated hip, Sydney with her torn rotator cuff. Ian was being looked at in the training room. Bocephus had yet to be pooped out by Bess. That left Pete alone, dealing with harsh disappointment. Ogres 2 games, Ridgebacks 1, match over, season over. He kept catching himself hoping it was a hallucination or something, that it wasn't real, that the Ridgebacks could go back in time and win one of those last 2 games. But that was a dream, and reality didn't give a stinky pile of dino dung about dreams. The door to the rejuve room opened. In walked Ian Bajas, on crutches. White plastic encased his leg. He looked pale, maybe from the after effects of blood loss.
"Hey, Cap," the dwarf said. "How's it hanging?"
Pete drained his beer, reached out, and plucked his last mag can from the thick rejuve fluid.
"I have seen better days."
Ian nodded.
"You and me both."
Pete wanted to laugh. The kid was 20 years old. He'd heal so fast that 9 puncture wounds in his thigh would be little more than an inconvenience. Pete would spend weeks recovering. "You and me both." The kid had no idea what age would do to him. Pete nodded toward a seat at the side of the rejuve tank.
"Wanna sit down, have a brew?"
Ian shook his head.
"Don't have time. Things are popping, old man. I came to tell you something, because I think you deserve to be the first to know."
No smile, no arrogant sneer. Ian looked sad but committed. He was here on business.
"Season's over," he said.
"That it is." Ian looked off. His fingertips played with the handle of his left crutch.
Out with it, kid, Pete said.
He tried to keep his voice neutral, supportive even, but he couldn't hide a strand of anger. He knew what Ian was going to say.
I'm leaving the Ridgebacks, Ian said finally,
words that clearly hurt while bottled up and hurt even more as they came out.
I'm signing with a new team. And how is Anna Vellani these days?
Ian's face went white.
How did you know? Does it matter?
Ian looked down again. This had turned out to be even harder than he had thought.
No, I guess not. I just wanted to tell you first, Cap. I learned a lot from you, but it's time to move on.
I get it, Pete said. You want to lead a team, and you sure as hell aren't going to lead the Ridgebacks. That's my gig. I know we didn't get along all the time, Ian, but, well, I have to be honest with myself and with you. You're wondering if you're ready to lead a team? You are.
Those big eyes looked up again, wide with hope, with eagerness, with an almost desperate need for approval.
You think so, Cap?
Pete nodded.
I do. Good luck. But know that when I face you on the pitch, Bess and I are going to kick your ass.
Ian finally smiled. That smile said, I know something you don't.
We'll see, he said. Well, I gotta go. I have a press conference scheduled in an hour.
He drained his last beer, tossed the empty mag can away, then offered his hand.
Good luck, kid. I think you're going to do great things.
Ian leaned on his crutches to shake Pete's hand. Then, without another word, the young man turned and hobbled out of the room. Ian thought he had the inside info, did he? Well, that was just fine. Pete wanted him to think that until it was too late. He liked the kid, but the kid was no longer a teammate.
I bleed crimson and black, he said as he sank deeper into the Reju fluid. Everyone else is my enemy.
The sling strap chafed Pete's shoulder, but that was probably because he was sweating right through his shirt. One more day of this damn thing. Two, maybe, and he'd be mostly back to normal. He stood in the tack room, alone, waiting, nervous as hell. Fred's message had been delivered. Now Pete had to deal with what he had asked for. Another season in the books, and with it over, Smithix Arena seemed like a ghost town. Empty suits of crimson and black armor stared at him from their stands. Tiny little samurai, judging him on what he'd done right, what he'd done wrong. Pete couldn't help but thinking those suits were quietly whispering, "You stupid little man, you've gone too far." Maybe he had. He was putting his life on the line for what he believed in. Bess was his. He wasn't going to give her up. Not for money, not for power, not for anything. He had no spouse, no kids, no significant other. He had his career as a writer, which couldn't last more than another season or two, honestly, and he had that T-Rex.
"I won, Pete," he said to himself. "How about you get a dog? You'll live longer."
Only Bess wasn't just a pet. She looked like a T-Rex, walked like one, but she was more than that. All the dinos were more. Bess's ability to understand things, lately it had become, well, kind of spooky. Would that continue? Pete didn't know, but whatever came, he would be there for her. A black-furred, bejeweled Quith leader and a big human in a three-piece suit entered the tack room. Pete steeled himself. This was a different kind of game, and he had only one chance to get it right.
"Poughkeepsie Pete," said Greedock the Splithead. "I've traveled a long way to talk to you."
He gestured to the big human, silver bracelets tinkling when he did.
"This is my associate, Bobby Brobst."
The human nodded.
"Nice to meet you, Mr. Poughkeepsie."
Pete waved a hand.
Just call me Pete. None of this Mr. stuff.
All right, Bobby said.
He smiled.
That first game against the Ogres was shucking amazing, Pete. I've never seen anything like it.
Enough,
Greedock said.
Bobby, did I ask you to talk Pete's ear off?
Bobby's smile didn't fade, and his eyes didn't leave Pete. He shook his head.
No, Mr. Splithead, you didn't. My apologies.
The human said those words sincerely, but also like he had said them 100 times before. Bobby Brope seemed like the kind of sentient who knew exactly how to walk the fine line his lethal boss laid out for him. Pete had fought many sentients of various species. He knew how to size someone up. Bobby Brobst wasn't some discount thug, a gangster hired for cheap. Pete could kick the crap out of many people twice his size, but one glance told him it wouldn't be that way with Brobst. Greedock walked to a battered suit of armor set up on a stand. It just happened to be Pete's. The leader's pedipalp reached out, black furred fingers tracing the long fissure left on the forehead by Bocephus's axe.
Impressive,
the leader said.
Violence so intense it damages even the best armor. Hard to imagine a blow like this doesn't damage the brain inside the armor. Human brains are such delicate things.
Pete rapped his knuckles against his own forehead.
No scrambling here. Right as rain. Did you watch the match?
Greedock turned. His clear, softball-sized eye gazed at Pete.
There is but one sport, and its name is football.
The leader said.
I've not watched even a moment of your glorified gladiator circus.
Pete winced at the leader's choice of words. Maybe Greedock didn't really understand what a circus was. Pete understood all too well. Greedock stepped closer.
In my chosen profession, most humans are of grotesque size. It is rare that I can stand face to face with one.
Funny, Pete said. I stand face-to-face with leaders all the time, although by the time I'm finished with them, they're usually face-down on the ground.
Pete had tried for at least a little intimidation, but Greedock seemed unfazed. Pete wanted to kick himself, as if this gangster would ever be afraid with his killer bodyguard standing close by.
I am here because I was told you were going to pay Sultan's debt,
Greedock said.
For some unknown reason, you insisted on paying me directly.
Pete nodded.
Yes, that is what you were told.
Greedock stared for a moment. The faintest ribbon of black flickered across his cornea.
Gonzaga,
Greedock said.
He lied to me. Again.
Pete shrugged.
I don't know anything about that. What I do know is I can get you more than what you're owed. A lot more.
The leader turned toward Brobst.
This miniature version of a human says he can get me more than what I am owed. Did you hear that, Bobby?
Brobst nodded.
I did, Mr. Splithead.
Greedock again faced Pete.
That is good, because at first I thought it was my imagination. Tell me, Pete, why would you give me more than I am owed?
Because I get something out of it, too.
The leader nodded, a mannerism that required his species to move head and shoulders together.
Of course. Every good business being wants something for their troubles. Tell me, Pete, what is it that you are offering?
And there it was, the moment Pete had angled for. He had to go for it.
The Ridgebacks, Pete said. I'm offering you the entire franchise, lock, stock, and a barrel.
Greedock stared for a few moments. Nothing moved except his soft, black-furred eyelids.
Pete, it is unfortunate that you were unaware I do not like having my time wasted. Such an action makes me upset. Making me upset carries consequences.
But I'm not wasting your time, Pete said, shaking his head. This offer is...
The Ridgebacks are not yours to sell,
Greedock said.
The organization is the property of Sultan the Grimy. Unless, perhaps, you have taken legal ownership in the time it took me to travel here from INF?
Well, no.
Well, it's not like that.
So, you cannot sell me this franchise,
Greedock said.
And even if you could, why would I want it? I own a Tier 1 GFL franchise. What business would I have with your backwater regional sport?
The leader turned and walked to Brobst.
Bobby, I am upset. Please show this speck of a human what happens when sentients make me upset.
Brobst frowned. He clearly didn't want to do what he was asked, but he was going to do it anyway.
Yes, sir, Mr. Splithead.
The big human stepped forward, fists clenched. Pete stood his ground.
Greedock, I told you I would get you more. Are you really that stupid you don't even want to listen? I thought your kind was supposed to be smart.
Bobby took two more steps, reared a fist back.
Stop,
Greedock said. Brope's fist hung in midair.
Bobby, let us hear what he has to say.
Yes, sir, Mr. Splithead.
Brope stepped back, let his hands fall to his sides. Pete let out a slow breath of relief. He gathered himself, looked Greedock straight in the eye.
Sultan owes you big, Pete said. I don't know how much, but I know it's a lot. I know he can't even pay the interest. If you were to, I guess the word is foreclose, right now you could, well, you could make him give you the franchise to pay his debt.
The curl of black on Greedock's cornea thickened.
Who is this tiny human who speaks to me as if I needed his advice? If I wanted the franchise, I would have taken it. Your operation is so pitiful, it is... Bobby, what's that human phrase you use to describe something of insignificant value?
Chump change, Mr. Splithead.
Chump change,
Greedock said.
Why would I waste my precious time with chump change?
Because next year, the value is going to triple, Pete said. Quadruple, maybe more.
He had no idea how much, exactly, the value would go up. He didn't even really know the current value. He was flying by instinct. The curl of black faded away.
I'm listening,
Greedock said. Pete shook his head.
Oh, no, no way. You and I make a deal right now. If the information I provide benefits you, then you give me what I want.
Which is?
A 3-year no-cut contract, Pete said. You double my current salary, and in my contract it states two key things. One, I am the team captain. I run the show here just like I've done for years. And two, that I get approval on which mounts are bought or sold.
Greedock stepped closer once again. His eye remained clear, but Pete was certain he could sense eagerness. The game was on, and even if this game was far below Greedock's interest, the leader played to win.
You want me to offer you a contract to get information which might make me want to buy the team, but I can't offer a contract without owning the team. That's another human word. Your kind calls that a conundrum.
Your word will do fine, Pete said. All over the galaxy, people know that Greedock is not a sentient to be messed with. They also know that his word is gold. This information I have, Mr. Splithead, I promise you, I am not wasting your time. I've got inside knowledge that very few people have.
I do not care about your information,
Greedock said.
Bobby, this Yakko-Jet has wasted more of my time, and now I am even more upset than I was before. I believe that will require some broken bones. Start with his legs.
Brobst reached out a hand so large it should have been attached to a heavy G.
Anna Vilani is buying a team, Pete shouted.
The big human paused, hand hovering in mid-air. He glanced at Greedock, unsure of if he should stop or proceed with the beating.
Anna Vilani,
Greedock said. His voice sounded different, calmer, colder, and yet more
intimidating.
Why would she buy into this worthless league of yours?
Greedock's emotional control had slipped. Briefly, only for a split second, but Pete had caught it. The very mention of Lonnie's name had thrown him. It had thrown Probst as well. Pete looked back and forth between leader and bodyguard, trying to process what he'd seen. Greedock was more powerful than Volani, higher up in the criminal underworld structure. From what Pete knew, Volani and Greedock weren't fighting for the same territory. Greedock had stolen Jew Tweedy away from her. Was Greedock afraid Volani would want payback?
Answer me,
Greedock said.
Why is that human woman buying a Dinolition team? How much does she think she'll make?
The leader had control again, but it was too late. Pete had figured it out. Greedock wasn't afraid of Volani. He was worried about her, and that made sense. Her rapid ascension from thug to Tier 1 owner hadn't happened because she was stupid or because she was bad at business. Volani's orbiting death was in the same division as Greedock's Ionath Krakens. The more money she made, the higher salary she could pay, and the bigger threat she was to Greedock's annual quest of winning the GFL Solar Division and advancing to the Galaxy Bowl. Volani knows what I know, Pete said. She knows this league is going to blow up. She knows that if she gets in now, in a few years, she'll make a fortune.
How?
Greedock said.
How will the league make her this fortune? Tell me now, my patience is at an end.
Bobby Probst cracked his knuckles. He loosened his tie. Pete was intimidated, sure, but as a man who rode dinosaurs into battle on a weekly basis, intimidation was something he could handle.
No way, he said. You don't get my info for free. Come on, Greedock. I'm offering you a good deal. You're going to have to trust me. I'm not stupid. Do you think I'd have tricked you out here if I couldn't make it worth your time? Do you really want Volani to get a leg up on you?
The briefest curl of black on Greedock's cornea, then nothing.
If you tell me your information and I choose to not buy the Ridgebacks, then you are in for quite a lot of trouble. But if what you tell me convinces me, then yes, I agree to your terms.
The words rushed out of Pete. He told Greedock about the upcoming network deal, all the money that would come from that. He talked about merchandising, how it had increased year after year and was about to become a huge cash cow for the league. He talked about the efforts of team owners to lobby the Sklorno government for franchises on that species' homeworlds. He talked about the ratings explosion that had happened in the last few weeks of the regular season. He talked about upcoming stars like Ian and Hermano, about Dar, about the way the crowd went crazy for Bess and Wee Bob. He talked about how the value of every franchise would multiply exponentially when the entire galaxy tuned in to watch prehistoric beasts battle each other. And then, as his closer, Pete told Greedock everything he knew about Anna Volani's efforts to acquire a franchise. Now, before the cost of buying in skyrocketed when the network deal closed. When the last words left his lips, Pete held his breath. Greedock stared. He said nothing. Probst shifted awkwardly, not knowing what to do.
There's one final thing, Pete said.
I do not care to hear it, Greedock said. You are far too optimistic about your sport's potential. I have had enough of this. First, I will deal with you. Then I will deal with Salton.
He's in his office at the stadium, Pete said. He's meeting with Volani's people in an hour.
Greedock leaned back.
You said Volani is buying a team, but not the Ridgebacks. So why are her people here?
Because she is going to gut this franchise, Pete said. And if she does, she'll have the best team in the league. She'll be unbeatable. If she has her way, Mr. Splithead, then even if you do buy into Dinolition, when it costs far more than it does now, you won't be able to defeat her.
He felt sweat trickling from his armpits. Bobby's eyes practically pleaded, "Come on, give him something good. I don't want to break your legs. I really don't."
"Mr. Splithead, please," Pete said. "Just let me show you that one thing. It's right here in Ranch Ridgeback. If that doesn't win you over, then you do what you have to do."
Another curl of color, but this time a light red. Pete had spent enough time with Salt and the Grimy to know what that meant. Respect.
"You have conviction, Pete, and I admire that,"
Greedock said.
"Therefore, I will reward you for your conviction with a choice. If you stop this now, you will hurt, but you might survive. If I see what it is you want to show me, and it does not change my mind, which I assure you it will not, then I will leave you with the knowledge that in the very near future, someone else will visit you, and it will be the last visitor you ever entertain. Do you understand?"
Pete nodded.
"Good,"
Greedock said.
"Do you still want to play your game of show and tell?"
Pete nodded again. Greedock smoothed the fur on his lower arms.
"Very well, half-human. Lead the way."
Pete did. He pushed open the tack room door and stepped onto the empty training ground. Most of the dinos were asleep, deep in their pens, and weren't visible. Sydney stood at her fence, watching, interest instantly piqued by movement, by new smells. Her arm was fixed to her chest, much like Pete's was. Pete walked to the center of the training ground. Greedock and Brobst followed. The human had his hand in his jacket. His eyes swiveled, looking for any threat that might pop up.
"That is far enough,"
Greedock said.
"It stinks of feces here. I don't think we'll wait for a visitor after all. Bobby, I have been let on quite enough. Take care of this."
"But Mr. Splithead, we don't know this facility," Robes said. "There could be witnesses."
The leader stamped a little foot, making his jewelry rattle.
"Then kill the witnesses as well."
Pete wasn't about to find out if Bobby would obey the order or not. He cupped his hands to his mouth and shouted with everything he had.
"Bess, come!"
From the far end of the training ground, a 13-meter-long behemoth shot out of the shadows of her pen. Muscles rippled beneath her thick skin as she pushed off her left foot, then her right, quickly accelerating her 6,432-kilo mass.
"Sweet Buddha," Brobe said, his voice a disbelieving whisper.
Bess closed the distance to 40 meters. Legs pumped, her head lowered, her eyes narrowed. 30 meters. She roared, open mouth showing her long tongue, her dagger teeth. 20 meters.
"Mother of all,"
Greedock said. His voice sounded oddly normal, but there was nothing normal about the spots of pink that spread across his cornea. At 10 meters, Bess started to slow, big legs eating up the inertia, making the ground tremble. She stopped, her head just 1 meter from Pete, Bobby Brobst, and Greedock, the Splithead. Her big nose inched forward, nuzzled Pete. He patted the side of her mouth.
"That's a good girl," he said.
He nodded toward Greedock.
"Say hello to Mr. Splithead. He's going to make sure that you and I stay together."
The Tyrannosaur's massive head turned. Nostrils open, drew air, took in the scent of the leader.
This,
Greedock said.
"I, Chakatpelda Shimepolo."
Pete didn't speak any Quith languages. He had no idea what Greedock was saying, but he didn't have to know the words to read body language. Bess's deep breath ended. She let it loose, so much air shooting out of her nostrils, it made Greedock's fur blow back. Greedock reached out a pedipalp, tentatively, silver bracelets tinkling. His hand froze halfway to Bess's nose. His softball-sized eye glanced at Pete, the cornea swirling with mad colors, the pink of fear, but also yellow and light orange.
May I?
The leader asked. Bobby Brobst had gone white as a sheet when Bess came rushing in. Pete wouldn't have thought the big human could be any more shocked, but when Greedock the Splithead asked that question, Brobst stared at the leader, open-mouthed, as if a massive dino that could eat them all in one bite was utterly inconsequential in comparison. Pete nodded.
Sure, Mr. Splithead, she won't do anything bad unless I tell her to.
Greedock's big eyes swiveled, dreamily, and again took in the splendor of old Bess. The Pettypalp hand patted the nose, stroked the few baby feathers that remained. Greedock's eye narrowed, and the delighted colors faded. His fingers traced the scars on Bess's skin, some old and tight, some new and pink.
So much damage, the leader said.
Yeah, Pete said. She's a warrior.
Bess snorted lightly, the air making Greedock's eye blink. Then, without warning, her massive tongue slid past her teeth and gave the leader one big, wet lap. Greedock stumbled back as Pete's heart sank. He'd been so close.
Bess, no lick!
The leader stood there, black fur glistening with wetness.
Mr. Splithead, I'm sorry about that.
Greedock held up a single Pettypalp hand. Pete stopped talking, instantly and reactively, as suddenly as if Greedock had simply turned off his ability to speak. Such power this leader commanded.
Your apology is unnecessary, Pete. The animal is merely being affectionate.
Pete nodded fast, a little faster than he would have liked, but now wasn't the time to worry about his pride.
She doesn't do that often, Mr. Splithead. I think she likes you.
Greedock kept patting Bess's nose. Her eyes narrowed in pleasure.
I had no idea that such creatures were so magnificent,
Greedock said.
Sentients would pay significant amounts of money to watch such an animal in combat. Perhaps I was wrong to prejudge your sport.
The leader stopped patting the T-Rex. He turned to face Pete.
You said Villani's representatives were coming in an hour?
Pete glanced at his palm up.
50 minutes now, Mr. Splithead.
I see,
Greedock said.
And how far away is Sultan's office?
Pete pointed down Champions Road.
Maybe a 15-minute walk.
Which leaves us 35 minutes, Greedock said. Tell me, would that be enough time for...
Greedock's voice trailed off. A flash of yellow-orange, and then the cornea was once again clear as crystal.
Pete, would it be possible for me to take a ride?
Bobby Brope's stunned expression didn't change, but his head shook slowly. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. Pete smiled.
Sure thing, Mr. Splithead. Let's get you geared up.
Greedock the Splithead had entered the tack room with perfect fur, nice clothes, and enough jewelry to pay for Bayman to start several new baby dinos. Now, standing with Pete and Bobby Brobst outside the door to Sultan's office, the leader looked quite different. Bits of mud and grass speckled his clothes, and his fur was stiff and sticking up in clumps thanks to a second, far wetter lick from an affectionate Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Bobby,
the leader said,
kick this door in.
It's open, Pete said. It's always open.
He reached to turn the handle, but Greedock's middle hand snapped out whip-fast, locked down on Pete's wrist.
If you're going to work for me, you need to learn two things,
Greedock said.
First, if your opinion is required, it will be asked for. Do you understand?
Pete swallowed, nodded. Things were changing fast, but he already knew the relationship he'd had with Sultan would be very different from the one he would have with Greedock the Splithead. Sultan was a wannabe gangster. Greedock was the gangster criminals wanted to be.
When you dance with the devil, it's he who calls the tune.
I understand, Pete said. And the second thing?
Sometimes practicality must take a backseat to a flair for the dramatic. Bobby?
Bobby reached into his suit coat and drew an automatic. He raised a big foot and kicked out. The door broke in half and tore free, the two pieces flying into Sultan's office. The human stepped in, gun level.
Just keep your hands right there, he said. All four of them.
Greedock entered. Pete followed. Inside, Sultan sat behind his desk, cornea already curling with pink. In front of his desk sat two chairs, one empty, the other holding the key, Tianok. Kowellan, the Kredorakian, perched on Tianok's shoulder. Behind Sultan stood the Quith warrior that had ruined the front door of Pete's house. Petty Palp hands and middle hands were both raised because he was the one Bobby Brobst was aiming at. On top of Sultan's desk sat a black contract box.
Greedock,
the Greyford leader said. He glanced at Pete, eye narrowing with betrayal, then back to Greedock.
What are you doing here?
I've come to collect my debt. You are behind in payments.
I have the money, Sultan said. Enough to cover the interest, and I'll have the full amount in a few weeks.
Greedock walked to the desk, leaving a trail of fallen bits of mud and dirt in his wake. He sat in the empty chair.
I do not think you have the money for the interest payment. I will collect in full now.
Sultan pointed to the contract box.
I do have the money. I made a deal.
Pete's heart sank. They were too late. Greedock reached out slowly. Everyone sat very still. The leader's Blackford hand picked up the contract box.
So the deal is complete, Sultan? If I was to give you another box this very moment, you have the funds in your account to cover your interest payment?
Sultan's eye blinked twice, quickly. Red-violet swirled. Pete knew that color. Frustration.
Let me finish the deal, Sultan said. I'll have your money as soon as it's complete.
Greedock nodded, that strange whole upper body motion of his.
As I thought. Bobby?
The leader tossed the contract box into the air. Bobby's gun fired. The box shattered into a dozen pieces that scattered across the office. The barrel of Bobby's gun lowered, slightly, until it pointed directly at Sultan. If Greedock hadn't had everyone's attention before, he certainly had it now. He pulled another contract box from his belt.
I would rather you did not sell off the assets, he said. Your debt will be considered forgiven as soon as you sign over your team and the training facility.
Sultan's eye flooded black.
No, I won't sell you the Ridgebacks.
The offer has been tendered, Greedock said. Since you don't have the funds to cover your debt, you are in default to me. You are in default to Greedock the Splithead. You will understand, Sultan, that I cannot allow such a thing to happen. It is bad for my reputation.
The key growled a long sentence.
The great and delightful Tianok says that you are too late,
Kowellan said.
He says Anna Valani will stop this.
Greedock smoothed out his black fur, tried to peel away a glob of dried T-Rex spit.
You have 10 seconds to leave this office, he said, or I will feed you to my new pets. Pete, what was the name of the one with the teeth and the surly attitude?
Sydney, Pete said, and she hasn't eaten all day.
Tianok said something Pete couldn't understand. Quellen apparently did understand and did not agree.
Oh, screw that, you disgusting salamander,
the Kredorakian said.
You are on your own. Also, you fart constantly, and the stink is abysmal.
Quellen hopped off the key's shoulder, flapped madly, and flew from the room. The warrior sprinted out behind him, leaving Tianok alone.
5 seconds,
Greedock said. Tianok launched himself out of the chair so fast he fell,
long body skidding across the floor. He scrambled to his 6 feet and rushed out.
Excellent,
Greedock said.
Now that we will not be interrupted, Salton, shall we complete the deal?
The current team owner sagged in his chair. It was over, and he knew it. Pete watched Greedock take everything Salton had worked so hard for. It was sad in a way, and Pete felt the tiniest bit guilty, but that guilt was insignificant compared to the relief he felt. 3 more years with Bess. At least, maybe more if he played his cards right and learned how best to work for Greedock. Yes, the season was over, but he and his mount, his best friend, would remain together. They would train hard in the off-season. Dar's talent would continue to grow, and next year she would take Ian's place as the number 2 rider on the team. Critter would heal. If Pete could develop sticks, or possibly convince Greedock to shell out the dough for a free agent rider or two, the Ridgebacks would be back in contention. And then, Poughkeepsie Pete and Old Bess would ride again. They would fight for a title. They would do it together.
And that concludes our presentation of The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella written by Scott Sigler and Paul E. Cooley. We hope you guys loved this book. Scott and Paul worked so hard for so long to make this great story, and I, for one, just love it. Here at Empty Set Entertainment, we value the time you give us more than anything else because we know it's irreplaceable. So thank you so much for listening. And one last time, do you have questions about The Rider? Get them in now for our Q&A episode next week. Email those questions right now to info@emptyset.com. And that's all I've got for this week. We'll be back next week with The Rider Q&A episode. And until then, we will talk to you all real soon.
You have been listening to The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs. Serialized audiobook engineered by Steve the Iceberg Rickyberg. Follow Scott Sigler on Twitter and Instagram. The handle is @ScottSigler, or join his Facebook group at facebook.com/ScottSigler. Theme music is the song Drift by Separation of Sanity off their album The Crucible, available on iTunes and at Amazon.com. Audiobook copyright, Empty Set Entertainment, 2017.